Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Read. This is episode 138. My name is Pip Adam and yeah, thank you so much for listening. This is an amazing episode. I got to speak with Sylvan Spring about their incredible book, Killer Rack. It's just incredible. I just can't recommend it enough. It is just a beautiful and embodied, amazing read. Yeah, just highly recommend it. And funny, sometimes funny. It's an incredible conversation and I'm incredibly grateful to Sylvan. I'm still talking to people about where they're at, kind of. And Sylvan's book came out maybe a couple of months ago and we just talk a little bit about that. And yeah, thank you so much, Sylvan. I found it an incredibly I just found it a really healing and reassuring conversation. So thank you very much, Sylvan. And I hope you enjoy it. There are a few things I just wanted to highlight before the podcast. First of all, the day before I think we spoke, Sylvan, the spin-off, published this incredible conversation between Sylvan and Olive Nuttall, who's the author of Kitten. And I think it might be the best thing you're going to read this year. I would just highly recommend it. It's in the spin-off. It's called So Gay, Thank You for Noticing. It's an incredible conversation about two amazing books by two amazing authors. So yeah, highly recommend that. The other thing is we talk about a couple of things during the conversation, which I thought I'd just maybe broaden a little bit here and just maybe also bring some, I don't know, maybe just some awareness. No, undoubtedly anyone that listens here, probably all of this is old news, but I just thought I'd celebrate it. Yay. So in the week leading up to our conversation, Wellington-based singer-songwriter Vera Allen and Georgia Gets By, who's Georgia Knott, announced that they were pulling out of South by Southwest in protest of the festival's partnership with tech companies RTX, Collins Aerospace and BAE Systems, which have been linked to manufacturing and supplying weapons to the Israeli Defense Force. I've put a link in the show notes where you can read more about this. I would highly recommend going to Vera Allen and Georgia Gets By's Bandcamp pages. You can support these artists. You can imagine that South by Southwest is a big deal, and their words, both of the artists' words on their reasons to pull out are very inspiring, and just massive thanks, and go and check them out on Bandcamp. They're both amazing musicians as well. I mean, that's what's so great about it. You might get an awesome album. If you are interested in action around Palestinian liberation, what I was just thinking, you might read that article and then think, I want to take action. Like I say, most people listening probably already are, but I've found the Peace Action Wellington Facebook page quite useful. They also have a newsletter that they send out at the start of the week that gives you information about all action that's happening during the week around the liberation of Palestine and Gaza. So just highly recommend that. The other thing we talk about in the podcast is during the week, I think I mention it, I mean, gosh, it's all about me. There was some really, I don't know what the right word, it shocked me, it saddened me. There was a couple of cancellations at the State Library of Victoria. I think it's just called State Library of Victoria in Australia. And there's all sorts of strangeness going on. Like even myself, my tiny little self in recent times has had a couple of very strange things happen around stuff I've written about Gaza and Palestine and it not being allowed to be published as part of something else. And I just think there's this creeping strangeness happening. And I think it's a really good idea that we keep, I don't know that I just like to keep informed, not to make myself paranoid. I know we need time away from news and stuff, but I also think that just the example of what happened at State Library, and I think there's a little bit of creep happening here as well. So yeah, I've put a link to an article about this in the show notes as well. I think that is almost everything. I think I said at the start of this I'd keep you informed about where I'm at. I just feel like so self-obsessed. But yeah, I quit my full-time job a couple of weeks ago and have written nothing. There you go. It makes you feel better. Yeah, I've written nothing. I feel really paralyzed now that I have all this time to write. It's just, yeah. I'm scared, but I'm trying to ease into it by reading some really nice books, and also, I'm also reading some books on how to write. Who knew? But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. I will keep you informed, I suppose, to keep myself accountable, I suppose. But yeah, back to Sylvan Spring. I mean, gosh, this is such an amazing conversation, and I am incredibly grateful to Sylvan for their generosity, their time for starters. Like, everybody is so busy. Like, even you can just hear in the roll call of horrendous things that is happening. Yeah, we're all very busy, and for Sylvan to take time is amazing. Which reminds me, there is one more thing. I'm really sorry. You are no doubt aware of the changes that happened in disability funding this week. Shock, terror, maybe horror is the right word. But just, yeah, horrendously, this government seems to have zero compassion. One thing I would recommend reading around this is on the RNZ website, under the New Zealand politics tab. Henrietta Bollinger has written an incredible article called Why We Cannot Let the Disability Support Changes Happen. Henrietta is an amazing writer. They're incredible. And this, I think, is just so nice. Of necessity, the media, well, I don't know, the media has been centering kind of parents, caregivers, and I think that's incredibly important for disabled people and for those people doing that work. And also, it's really great to have Etta's voice in the conversation as well. So, yeah, just amazing, amazing essay. Thank you very much for listening. Here is the interview with Sylvan, and I am sure you'll enjoy it. I'm not even going to say I hope you enjoy it. You're going to love it. Okay, thanks heaps. Bye. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
How are you, Sylvan?
I'm feeling pretty good. It's nice to be here with you.
Yeah, it's really lovely to be here. Thank you so much for taking the time out to come and chat. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited about the book and very excited, about everything. So, I guess how we normally start is I ask people if they'd be willing to introduce themselves, like however you feel comfortable introducing yourself.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Sylvan Spring. My mum's side of the family came to Heretanga, Hastings. Both of her grandparents arrived in the late 1800s and settled there, and my dad's side is kind of all over the place. Lots of people coming to the penal colony in Tasmania and then all sort of intermarrying from various different places. And my dad came over here in his late 20s, I think, and started managing. Do you remember when Molly Malone's used to be? I don't even know what that is now.
Yeah. I do remember that.
So it was called the Clarendon before it was called Molly Malone's,
Yeah,
my dad used to run the bar and my mum was like a barmaid, and that's how they met. And then along comes me.
That is a lovely story. I remember it from being in Wellington once. I think I was about 18. But yeah, I remember thinking it had a fan. I don't know why Clarendon sounds like a cool name.
I think it was just like a sports bar, to be honest.
Really?
I'm not sure,
actually. Because it felt like Yeah, sorry. I was thinking it felt like Avalon or something. I don't know why. Yeah, there was
the vibe
is. Yeah, it was like, oh, Clarendon.
It's very like misty British moors or something.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I was quite keen on it. Yeah, it sounds really good. Oh, that's really lovely. So, but you have always lived in
Aotearoa. I moved to Tamaki when I was 18.
Oh, nice.
And spent a couple of years there, but I think I was just in a phase of my life where I was discovering a lot about myself, but like resisting a lot of that too. So I think I needed to kind of be back where, yeah, I felt safe and comfy after that. So yeah, and I haven't left.
I like it here. I don't know. Every now and then I look about, but I do like it here. It's very good. It's very good. I'm really glad you're here too. So in this series, I'm just asking people to talk about kind of where they're up to. However they wanted to do that on the day that we kind of catch up. And I was really keen to talk to you at this point because I think that, you know, there's the writing of a book, there's the working towards publication, then there's publication, and then there's this time afterwards. And I think that often there is... I could be wrong, but I feel like there's less kind of experience shared about the time afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just wonder, like, and you don't necessarily have to talk about Killarack, like it might be something else that you're up to, but I just wonder, today, where do you feel like you're up to?
Ooh, I like this. if I'm being super honest, I sort of turboed my way through the launch and everything. And I think because I was doing it similar to you, a little bit unconventionally compared to the usual Unity Books one, which no shade on Unity Books, like that's a beautiful rite of passage for so many people. But I think I sort of put more pressure on myself to have to do heaps of stuff. And like I was bringing like the lighting and the food and everything. And then being the center of attention, which I really struggle with. but I honestly talked so much at that launch. I was like, this is my stage. I'm going to do it. And instead of like being really like shy and saying only a few words, I was like, I'm going to just explode with words. It was honestly a little bit too much. but yeah, I think I just sort of realized after that period that I've been spending a long time like not really tending to myself, suppressing a lot of emotion and not actually thinking about my needs and kind of policing myself a lot. And have kind of gone through a big period in the past maybe a month or so, where I've just been like crying and shaking and getting it all out, and figuring out where to from here, which has been really nice and makes me feel like I can connect with the book a bit more and not feel so like I think I was just stuck in any negative emotions that I had about it, like cringing at my past self and all that kind of stuff, and now I feel way more at peace with it and I'm like, oh, this is a cool thing that, you know, some people like, it wouldn't be what I would write now, obviously, but yeah, just respecting it as an artifact of my past, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, thank you so much for that. I really relate to that completely. Like, I feel like, I do feel like there are phases. I do feel like that often after publication. Like, it does feel like publication. I really liked the way you used that word, policing, because I think there does need to be I find the editing process really stressful as well, and like I find myself having to really check how I'm talking to people, and you know, like it's very hard to there's a extended period of kind of justifying the work, which is often hard, and then the publication of the book, and yeah, like you say, I'm never comfortable with people looking at me, and you know, like I just really relate, and I do think there's something I think unfortunately society kind of sees some emotions as, what's the right word? Like, yeah, I just think that there's this really, I don't know if this is the right word, I'll probably use the wrong word, but this kind of quite sacred little period of sort of popping away, letting the emotions come that I've been bottling up and then carrying on. And I just think, yeah, I think it's something, I don't know if anyone else is like that, but I do know that it's really important to me. It's as much as important as writing the book, that phase is quite important as well, but yeah.
And has that happened with all the books that you've written?
Yeah, every single one, there's just been, and it's almost like a period of, I don't know, it almost feels like giving something away, and I get a little bit of sadness, and yeah, and then it can be a little bit brutal because then you start in with other people having opinions, and yeah, you know, like it's all of a sudden it's like, whoa, okay, radio. Like I remember the first book that I wrote, I was in Unity Books, and someone said, "Oh, I read your book," and I looked at her in a very bad way because she was like, "Oh," and I sort of said to them, "Oh, I don't remember giving you permission to read my book." Like that weird, you know what I mean? That weird thing where it's like, "Oh, it's out there now.
I don't have any control over this."
Yeah, it's a very weird feeling. But yeah, and this is why I think I'm just so incredibly grateful to people that write and publish books, because I mean, the book means so much to me. And yeah, I also really acknowledge that it's you know, it's everything, isn't it? It's like whoop down, round, you know, all the way around. What I have been doing is sort of asking people to kind of think of something that is kind of supporting them during this time, or something that they're using during this time. And I was just wondering if you had a chance to think about, you know, like I've been using the word object, but I think it can be anything. Like, yeah, I don't know if you've had a chance to ever think about that kind of thing.
I did. I don't have a physical object. This is going to sound a little bit corny. I'm getting more comfortable with talking very emotionally in a more public setting. But I think my own heart is kind of the thing at the moment, and just like feeling that and letting that be raw and tender, and tending to the tenderness of that. Has kind of been the thing for me at the moment. Yeah,
I really love that. I just think I really like that idea of tending to the tenderness. I think I really get that. I love it so much. I'm going to get onto really practical questions now, but okay. I bet we stay, you know, you and I are, you know, I think we're going to stay.
It's going to be emotional.
It's going to be emotional. we're full-bodied humans, earthlings. One of the things I was wondering about is, and I think people might be interested in, is after a book comes out, I'm imagining this week you and Olive Nuttall published an incredible conversation in the spin-off, and I was just thinking, like, after the book's out, there's still work that needs to be done, and I'm just wondering, like, what do you feel like, this is a strange question, but like, are there work hours and things that you're doing to do with the, like, the physical book and the, you know, the business of the book kind of stuff? Yeah,
I suppose there are. I guess I haven't been thinking about them as work hours so much, because they just feel like fun little things that I get to do, which is nice. I mean, there's an aspect of kind of self-motivating to do those things, and they can be hard. But I guess just that kind of publicity process is inherently sort of a bit more connective with other people, and you know, you get to get a little bit more of a sense of your book as a living object, so I feel like that's kind of helped me feel like it's just a bit of fun rather than work, but yeah, there's definitely like a couple of hours a week going into that, I'd say.
And like, I really like the idea that the book itself kind of changes, I imagine. Like, I don't know, like I feel like sometimes, I mean, everybody's different, but I do feel like I sort of visualize it differently throughout the process, if you know what I mean. And I just wonder the sort of transition from it being something that you're working with by yourself, and then something that you might bring to a workshop, then something you work with an editor with, then something, you know, that now belongs to everybody kind of thing. I just wonder, Yeah, I don't even know how to ask this question. I'm just wondering, like, do you have any thoughts about that process and how the book's changed? Or has it, like, because I also totally acknowledge that it might have stayed exactly the same the same way through as well. But
yeah, that's a really good question that I haven't really thought about.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it feels like, I'm saying this as if it's an entity apart from me, which I guess it feels like if I'm saying it this way, but like it's always had a strong sense of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that it hasn't been heavily influenced by other people. And I think for me, like, I've always really wanted to make writing a really collaborative process. I'll always be sending things to other people and they'll be sending things to me, you know, like people close to me, and you get more comfortable with doing mm-hmm. that. But it starts off like you're like absolutely just like a tender little like oyster that's open to the air. And you know, I guess having that support from lots of friends throughout the process, you know, they've obviously very much shaped
mm-hmm.
what has been written, and I guess it just feels nice to have that anchoring and community from the start of that process right through, and that maybe makes it feel a little bit less of a transition. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking about it as well. Like, I was just thinking about I was thinking a lot this morning about your dedication in the book. Like, is that what that's called? That, you know, who it's for in the book. And just this idea that it is something that is, I read this really cool thing about collaboration this morning about how it's not, it's with everything, you know what I mean? Like, it is this thing that, yeah, and I totally agree. I really think that you've hit something that I've been trying to sort of verbalize for years, but I think that's what it is it's like, because it's sort of born of community and that community sticks around as you go through it, it does feel like, yeah, it doesn't, the transition is not as massive because that idea that it has a readership, or I hate that word, but you know what I mean? Like, it has people that, you know, like, understand it and work with it and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to talk a little bit about this idea of community. I don't know, from the launch to the book itself to some other thing, like the album,
mm-hmm.
I just love the way you've continued to be able to kind of inject back into it this collaboration. And I know you talked a little bit about it to Olive, but I just wonder about the idea for the album. And was that something that was born very early on, or was it something that at the end, yeah, I just wonder, can you talk a little bit about it? Because I just feel like it's one of the greatest gifts. Like, I was so excited when it came out and just listened to it, went for really nice long walks and listened to it. And it's such a superb way of re-experiencing the book, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I can't really even remember how it came about in the first place. I think maybe I was just making a little bit more sort of soundscapey ambient music at the time, and I was like, oh well, you know, like this could fold in with words really well, and I'm lucky enough to be friends with a lot of people that are so insanely talented at making music, and yeah, I think it just sort of went from there, and it was this innate sense for me of not quite that the written word doesn't feel like enough, but there's just personally for me, like, something lacking in vitality sometimes with just reading words on a page, and that being, you know, one person's work, and just like, just the being able to kind of bring it into so many other spheres and just work with friends and then be really excited about it and have fun with it. And yeah, kind of bring the words to a more embodied place as well. I don't know, it was just kind of this innate feeling in me that I didn't really have words for, and I just kind of reached out and sent these weird chaotic messages to my friends, and they were all like, yes, let's do it. So I was like, okay, cool, guess we're doing this. Yeah, and I'm really glad that it did happen. It was a lot of admin at one stage in my life. But yeah, I think it just added a lot of color to that process for me that I hope, you know, resonates with people who get to listen to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really love that idea of the embodiment of it. Like I love it when you think and write and talk about pop music. Like I just, yeah, I think, I don't know. I know it sounds really silly, but I really feel like commercial radio kind of saved me as a child, you know, like it just, I had this body that I wasn't quite sure what to do with. And there was something about, I've been thinking a lot about that Frankie Goes to Hollywood album, but, you know, like there was something about, you know, like the way music made me feel that just, yeah. And I just love the way, I don't know, like what I really love is in your work, and your DJing as well, like you get to hold these two, you get to hold something like Cocteau Twins, which is very, you know, feels quite, you know, and then you also get to hold Robin. And, you know, like I really love the way that the book, the album kind of brings that back into the work, which I think is really, really great. And that feels a bit like a collaboration as well, like... The shape of the book feels quite reminiscent of, you know, crystal cases. Is that what you call them? Like CD cases and stuff like that. And I just wonder, like when you were writing, obviously, well, I don't know, like I feel like often we write in an A4 shape, but were you thinking about a squarer shape? I mean, yeah, this is a silly, boring, practical question, but yeah.
No, it's a good one. I honestly don't think about shape that much. I think I will more now after all this, but no, Ashley Young actually suggested the square shape for the sort of replicating EP or a CD, and I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And she I think has a really strong sense of that kind of stuff and form and all and yeah, that's never been my strong suit. I'm not a super visual person. Like I'm one of those people with the, you know, the thing where you visualize an apple and I sort of can see like a small hazy fragment of the apple.
Yeah.
So no, that really didn't factor in a lot at the time.
And the structure of it, like the A-B side kind of stuff, was that, sorry, these are very boring questions, I just realized, but... Can you talk about why it's important, like what you think makes that the perfect vessel for the poems that are in here? Yeah, actually, that's a good place to start. Like, what do you think it is about that A-B symmetry kind of, you know, one side, other side kind of stuff that works so well for the poems that are in here? Or did you sort of, was it like, this is going to be A-B side and I'll write the poems to populate it?
So the original manuscript that I sort of submitted when I did my master's was quite a mess, I will say. And I don't think I had a sense of the structure. I think I was trying to make it more complicated than it needed to be. And I'd been doing that right from the start of the year, like trying to be like, okay, we're going to do it in this way and there's going to be these three streams running across and blah, blah, blah. And I just like, I don't know, sometimes I think you seek comfort in that having of a framework, but then you're like, oh, actually I can throw this out the door and it's like actually better sometimes. And yeah, shout out to Issa Ranapiri who read it and was like, I think you should do this as side A and side B. And there was definitely a distinct sort of a first set of poems and a last set of poems, and then a lot of stuff in between, and all this stuff in between just came out. And Yeah. So, I mean, again, I think it comes back to that communal sense of like, so many people have such wonderful things to add, and you don't have to have the vision of a project all by yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this, I just think this is so helpful. It's really helpful for me. I'm very selfish, but I think it'll be helpful for other people as well. This idea that, you know, there is, what am I trying to say? Like, sometimes I set myself a time frame. I write the thing. I'm like, right, all right. It's precious. It can't move. And then something else, I'll be off on the next shiny thing. And then I'll come back two months later. And then I'll be like, actually, I can get rid of that. You know, like, it actually isn't, it's not going to destroy me if I get rid of that middle bit. You know,
yeah.
That'll be okay. And I think that's what's one of the great things about this. Weirdly, I think that the structure of the MA is like those weeks of writing, then there's the waiting, which I think is one of the most useful parts of the thing.
Mm.
And then there's the life coming back in. And I just think that in some ways it feels like a four-year course, even though it's only 1 year there, if you know
yeah,
what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I love that. I love that idea that, that we don't have to come up with all the ideas ourselves. And I guess for me, having never done music or anything like that, it does feel like that there is an openness perhaps in musicians that there isn't in writers sometimes. I don't want to like make a binary, but you know what I mean? Like, it feels like my friends that are musicians are a little bit more at home with putting out an idea, taking back the idea. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something inherent in that kind of collaboration of like playing together and having to fit together all the time, you know, like, I mean, you can be a musician by yourself, obviously, that's possible, but most of them, you know, play with each other, and there's so much learning and like beautiful learning in that, that I think has, benefited me so much as a writer as well, to be like, I don't just have to hole myself up in a room and like, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I used to think that. I used to think it has to be lonely and it has to...
You used to be pained.
This was a big thing I had. It was like, I remember I stopped. I had a very bad alcohol and drug habit. And when I stopped it, I thought, oh, well, I'll never write again. You know, like, I can't write if, you know, if I'm the remotest bit happy, I can't write. And because I wasn't very happy, but, you know, I could see that it was on the horizon. Happiness. Oh, no, like horses. I just think that I do think there's a way, and I think you put it so beautifully at the start, of kind of looking after ourselves and still continuing to make art, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's still such a pervasive myth, a way that, like, you have to be, like, living on a mattress on the floor with, like, glass strewn about on the sheets and, like, you know, this chaotic lifestyle to be interesting. And it's like, That does feel quite played out at this point, eh? Like, it's so much more interesting to see the, like, hopefulness and depth that people arrive at when they're tending to themselves and to their community. And like, that's, I mean, it's a scary time. That kind of stuff is so reassuring to have around, eh?
Mm.
Yeah. Like, audition as well. Like, I found the end of that, like the last sequence of that, really gave me some of that energy, I think. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Because I think that is one of the great things, like, when at this phase, like the phase that you're at the moment, is like that's what I was thinking about, your launch and like just like making space for joy, if you know what I mean. Mm. Like, and there is so much joy in the book. Like, I mean, the book is just such a, I don't know, like, it's got everything in it. But I think joy is one of the hardest things to write. But, you know, making space for joy. And I just wonder, like, this idea of having, you know, because like you say, it wasn't it was a slightly different launch to some of the others that we see in town. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, it just feels like the whole, like a lot of people in your communities kind of came to celebrate the book. And I just wonder, Yeah, just, I don't know if you've got anything to say about the joy of, you know, post-publication, like, yeah.
Yeah. It was very joyous, the launch itself. It was really lovely, and you know, I got some mates to read their work, and my friend Flora launched it, and Ashley spoke as well. And it was almost like I just set myself up for this big public yep. honey roast. And I was like, oh, I feel weird about this now.
Hi, everyone. Oh, me?
But, you know, I just willfully sort of honey roasted everyone back. And that was quite cute. And yeah, I think it was nice to just, for me, personally, just often book launches feel a little bit like you're sort of come in and then you go straight out again, and it's very there's not really space to kind of just be. And I wanted that, so sort of you know, making lots of food and then getting people to bring food as well was a really nice way to have that, and having Sam, my friend DJ, and that nice sort of Ardwell Valley community space, being able to be outside as well. Yeah, just made it feel a bit more like an event, and a bit more like, you know, people could hang out and vibe, and yeah, I think that brought me joy, just to like make that space. And I was just turbo running around doing things, so like I don't know if I enjoyed it yeah, so much. Yeah. But yeah, and then post. I don't know if I've sort of got into the joy phase yeah. yet. Yeah. As we said, we, you know, that kind of tender, close yourself off a little bit phase is still rounding off for me, I think. Which is not to say that joy isn't present as well. But yeah, maybe that'll come.
Yeah, because I think that's the kind of thing I think what I was talking about is, oh gosh, does this sound codependent? But just that idea of sometimes the book comes out and it is an offering of joy, and then as the writer, I just want to creep away for a while, and that's totally cool. But it feels, I think it's part of that, the book getting its the life of its own, mm-hmm. you know, like the book kind of just being out there, and, you know, like, I don't know, like, yeah, like new people getting to experience it, which I think is really nice. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I don't know, in the process of leading up to releasing it, I was kind of scared that, like, people would think I was the sort of, like, hectic party twink that's sort of, like, I think I was in the process of writing myself out of being that person as I wrote that book. And then, you know, I launched it and that's all gone away, which
yeah.
is nice.
Yeah. Because it is strange, isn't it? Like, often, I can't remember who it was, but I remember someone talking about this. Like, I often find that, like, the book is often 2-3, well, for me, because it takes me a while. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's often quite old, and then all of a sudden people are asking me questions about the book, and I'm just like, I don't remember, you know, like, I don't know, I wrote it, you know, I don't know, it's got my name on it, I must have written it. But, like, I do think that it is an interesting thing to have these two parts of ourselves mm-hmm. presented at the same time, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you kind of just express that. But, yeah, it's an interesting process, and I like the way, I just thought it was really nice the way you said that, you know, there's an opportunity to honour that old self as well, or mm-hmm. like, you know, to hold it and just say, yep, yep, yep. But also, yeah, it is a strange experience of sort of moving on from it, which is really, yeah, I don't know, I always find it quite strange.
yeah, there's almost a sense that you're going to get caught in the self that you were when you wrote it, which is obviously a bit silly to, you know, that's not going to happen, but... Or just, like, that you have to, yeah, kind of present that self, or, like, be really, like, this is who I am, because obviously I'm releasing this book and I have to, like, 100% be it and believe in it. And it's like, I mean, you can be like that. I'm sure there are some people that are like that. But it's quite nice, actually, in a way, to be like, oh, there's been quite a bit of growth since this, and this is like a marker for that, if nothing else.
And I do think, like, it's I often, like, I'm always in awe of people that write personal essay, and I think that's what's really interesting about poetry is people often try to squeeze biography and it's the same with my books, you know, there's often a lot about me in the books. But I think that, it's that interesting idea that that's a part of me that I'm willing to show. You know, I have all this, you know, like I have like a herd of horses behind me that are other things about me. Mm-hmm. And I just think, it is very interesting. Like I imagine people, expect to meet one person and, you know, I'm like a different person. But I do think that it gives me insight into that. Those personal essay writers, like I think it must be, it is the idea of one part of the personality maybe, or yeah, like an experimentation of the personality maybe even. Quite interesting.
That's interesting, eh? And sort of how much identity you reveal in those different forms, because I feel like, I mean, I'm not particularly good at it, but I have tried a little bit of writing fiction,
mm-hmm.
and it almost feels more exposing than writing poetry. Like I was like, whoa, this is like, ooh, like the worlds that you construct rather than the ones that already exist are kind of more exposing.
Yeah, I really like that. I really think that's true. Like I think, I never thought of that, but it is so true. Like having worked, you know, having kind of the privilege to work next door to people that are writing, like it is a really interesting way to get to know someone, like with no information but the writing, it's a really interesting way to get to know them. And I think that's one of the big things with fiction is that I think I've often thought I'm hiding things and it's been blatantly clear. I remember writing a short story and there was one character that was me in it, and I was trying to write myself to make myself feel better about the situation. It was quite a true situation. I was like, yeah, I acted like this. I did not act like that. I was amazing. And then, I remember an editor saying, oh, everyone seems okay in the story, but I don't like her. She's no. terrible. Like, choice. That's excellent. That's
short true. Story therapy, and then putting that out and being like, you're awful. That's rough.
Do you know what we've noticed about this? We've noticed that you're very awful. No, it's really bad. Oh my God. When you one thing, this is a really boring practice. Well, I think the practical questions are interesting as well. Sorry, I'm just going to go there.
Yeah.
I think people might be interested to know. So there was the year of the MA sits sort of as a particular part of the process of writing the book. And I imagine there was something happening before the MA, and I imagine there was some stuff happening after the MA. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, I mean, did you go in with a lot of poems or,
No. No, I think I'd written poetry sort of very on and off, and like wasn't confident in it at all. I'd shared it with like one of my friends who was kind of encouraging, which was lovely. And then I applied to the masters on like a whim, just being like, I think it was like the day before it closed.
Love it.
And I was just like, okay, I guess I've got these poems that I just shared with my friend Brian, and I'll just put them in and see what happens. And I was kind of, I was in a chaotic phase of life, I think, then. And I was like, okay, I'm either, if I get in, I'm going to do this. And if I don't, then I'm going to move to Tāmaki.
Awesome.
And that was, I think, I don't know, you know, when you're in those kind of, you're younger and you're in those phases where you're like, I've just got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thankfully they let me in. I mean, I'd probably only written, other than like at school when you're asked to do it, I'd probably only written about 20 poems at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was like very much learning as I went, and, you know, being in class with people who had already written so much and been published and all those kinds of things. But, you know, I was blessed to have such a lovely class where they were just so, like, didn't care about any of that stuff and were just very, yeah, just very into whatever everyone else was into and really there for it. And yeah, that was just so nice. It was such a lovely year. I'm acknowledged that I'm very blessed in that, because I know that there are people who have really, really tough years. And in that program, I think it helped that everyone in our class was queer. And I do love working with people of like any age and the kind of wisdom that comes with being a bit older, but everyone was kind of 34 and under, awesome. Which I think helped with just like mutual intelligibility and not having to explain yourself all the time. Yeah. And then, yeah, I've kind of spottily been writing since then, and some of the poems that I've written since are in the book as well. And writing a little bit of essays, dabbling in fiction, just trying not to like force it, I guess, with that. I really, you know, I sometimes buy into that vibe of like, you have to write 10 pages every morning. But I just don't think it's for me. Like I did one of those, you know, when you do those strengths tests and it's like you're 25, they rate you on like 25 different strengths or something.
Yeah.
And like consistency and discipline were like the two bottom ones for me. And it was like, oh yeah, like I'm still trying to accept the fact that I will never be a consistent person. And that's fine. Yeah, just kind of, I really like, you've probably seen it, that quote about creativity from Björk, where it's like, it's sort of just a creature running from room to room and you've kind of just got to follow it around and leave it alone if it wants to be left alone and all that kind of thing. Like, I very much buy into that form of creativity for myself. So just letting whatever comes out, come out. If I feel like drawing instead, or like, you know, making food, or like just putting a lot of effort into my relationships, you know, that's all creativity coming out. Yeah.
Oh God, thank you for reminding me of that. I was just thinking about that the other day, because I think there have definitely been stages where I've had this anxiety that if I'm not doing 10 pages a day, it'll go away, or the, you know, like if I'm not sitting there, the creature won't come to me. But I do think like that, I just have this idea that everything's writing. Like, I have a friend who says that, like, everything's writing. Like, and I think that those other, life needs to be happening for me to write. Like, I don't know, like, I think I did used to think that I had to wall myself off, like I said before, but I think that it's much better for me if I'm having conversations and, you know, like, thinking about things and that sort of thing. So did you, like, like, did you think to yourself, because I guess the thing is with, it's very, I always find it hard to see where a project finishes, if you know what I mean. Like, what I find is that a novel will often get to a point where it's starting to turn into the next book, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm kind of reading it and I'm like, oh, maybe I could do this. And it's just like, no, hang on. You know, it's an octagon, but I'm trying to make it a triangle, you know. And I just wonder, like, how did you put a little barrier around this work, if you know what I mean? Like, if you've got all these other amazing things happening, how do you say, right, this is, did you set yourself a deadline or like, yeah?
It might not surprise you for me to say that I'm not a deadlines person. Yeah, I think it was a similar energy of just letting it finish when it wanted to finish.
Right.
You know, as I was saying, it sort of felt like a period that I was writing myself out of, although I didn't know it when I was in the midst of it. But as soon as I'd sort of finished writing the bulk of the poems and finished the MA year, I was like, oh yeah, you know, this is already a past me. And not wanting to dilute too much of that with, you know, the learnings that have come that have changed me from that person. Yeah, and just kind of, I guess, I think it's an indication for me when something needs to sort of round off when I start getting freaked out about it.
Yeah.
And all the possible paths that it could take.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of like, oh, okay, maybe I need to actually let this go because I'm just, you know, shooting off in all directions and not in a hot, like, I could think about this way and this way and woo. Yeah, how do you find that you know when something needs to
I really relate to that. Yeah, I get very, I don't know what the word is. Yeah, I do start, I don't know. Like, I think often it is, I mean, it's a body thing for me. Like, everything is all about how it feels. And, you know, like, I sit down and when I read it, I feel a certain way and I think, oh, yeah. That's, you know, that's finished, you know. And I think also I really relate to that. I think that in there is a degree of anxiousness or anxiety, whatever the word is, you know, around, oh my God, was it actually this? Or was it, you know, oh no, I thought it was this and it was this. And yeah, so I think that, yeah, I think that's how I get the feeling is like, yeah, that exactly, very similar to what you're saying. I think that it feels like it lands or it feels different. And yeah, I don't know.
I guess, sorry.
No, you go.
I've just been thinking about anxiety a lot recently as an indication that you're not following your intuition. Yeah. And so if that's coming up, it's like, oh, I'm forcing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really grateful you're saying that because I've been thinking the same thing. Like, you know, like it sort of like, yeah, I mean, like sometimes, yeah, like I was talking to a friend yesterday and like sometimes, you know, there are things about me that feel crippling and just like, oh no, this is, and yeah, she was just talking about that idea of having a conversation, you know, thinking about, you know, what is this actually a useful tool? And I think, you know, like I spend a lot of time trying to, you know, push it down and be like, oh, if I just breathe deeper, everything will be fine. And yeah, whereas I think I wonder what happens, like, you know, just having sort of been around a few more Buddhists, you know, what happens if I embrace that and say, okay, well, what does it have to tell me? And, you know, like looking at it face on, which I think is really good. And I do think that is so true with writing. Like, I think I'm at my most anxious when I'm somewhere where I shouldn't be, if you know what I mean. Like, where I'm really trying to force something to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So bizarre. Such an interesting thing, eh? Like, I don't know. Like, I always wonder what it must be like to... I just can't imagine writing without all this other psychic and physical stuff kind of going on. Like, I just...
I was thinking about that the other day, actually. Like, I was thinking about, you know, the kinds of people who... And no shade to them, my mum made me read this incredible murder mystery the other day, and I was like, this is amazing.
To them, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, the people who are able to write those kind of serial novels and how much that just must be sort of mechanical in a way and very formulaic and very, like, you know, there's an art in the science of it, I feel, but I just so don't relate to how they do that. Yeah.
There is an amazing article about Lee Childs and he starts every book on the same day every year. And it's just it is one of the most incredible things I've ever read about writing. And like I felt completely jealous. Like I was just like, oh, wow, it must be amazing. But also I was like, and I was just really interested in, like, because despite the fact that it was very, you know, like, I write this many words and blah, 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 this idea of this ritual of starting on the same day and this kind of, he talked a lot about meeting the characters and I was like, oh, yeah, maybe it's in everything. I don't know. But, yeah, I definitely have friends who I know, you know, are able to approach it in a different way to me. And I think that's what I think is great as well, is that there's all different ways of doing it, isn't there? Like, I just, yeah, I don't know. Maybe one day, maybe next year we'll talk and I'll be like that. I'll be like, oh, yeah, I got this.
Time to write my crime novel.
Oh, my God. I really have a dream about that. It would be so good. It'd be amazing. We're heading towards the end and I really only have a couple more questions.
Cool.
And the first one is just around... So I guess, like, I wonder if we can talk about, like, the work of getting the book ready for publication. So kind of like the editing and looking at covers and, you know, that kind of thing. And then also the bit at the other end. And I think we're sort of, you know, the space that you're in now, it sounds like you've got really good things around you to sustain you through that period of time. But I wonder what are different things that have sustained you? Like, I almost feel like it might be around people and stuff, but, you know, like, what are the things that keep you going through that time? Because, I don't know, like, personally, I've had times during that time where I've just thought, I'm running away now. Mm-hmm. I'm taking my book back. Like, I almost did that with audition. I was like, no, thank you very much. Goodbye. Goodbye. Sorry, I mentioned it.
I seriously thought about emailing Ashley and being like, can we just not?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how many of those she actually gets, because, yeah, I was exactly the same. But, yeah, what kept you going through that? What was it that made you not do that, maybe?
Ooh. That is a good question. I think probably a sense of sort of duty or obligation at that point,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, well, they've given me an advance. I've signed up to this. And I guess they believe it enough in it enough to see it through. And why can't I?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I guess maybe there was a sense of, at that stage of the process, viewing it as a little bit more of a job to sort of help. Because that was the weirdest part of the process by far for me, was kind of, I've never sort of commercially released any creative work before.
Mm.
And all the stuff that comes with that, like I had to find the particular record company that held the rights to the Venger Boys song that's in the first poem.
Yeah, yeah.
And pay them money, and that just felt so stark and strange as a way to start that process. It was just like capitalism really staring you in the face right at the start of that, and it was like, whoa, okay, this is something to get used to. But to be fair to Thwap, a lot of the rest of the process has been very just like, you know, like I got to just go into the Thwap office and hang out with Ashley and like edit poems together and have a cup of tea, and that was really nice. So I guess, as you say, the sort of connective people stuff is the part that got me through as well, and working with Axel Osthorn on the cover was really lovely. I knew that I wanted him to do it, basically, because I sort of used to live with him. He was his partner was my flatmate for a while, and so we were just around each other a lot, and I just love him. He's got such a beautiful energy, and his design aesthetic is just like incredible. He did the font for People Person, Joe Cho's book, and I was kind of like, oh well, he's dabbled in book design before, and I just kind of wanted to let him loose on it, and he made so many different versions of what that cover could possibly look like. It was quite amazing, but he sent a version of the balloons, was the first thing that he sent me. And then he tried a bunch of other things, and I just kept coming back to the balloons as sort of this, just very fitting image for this book in terms of the kind of the fun playfulness side of it, but also the kind of crammed hectic. It almost looks like it's reflecting like a party scene back at you a little bit. It sort of looks like this big sculptural object in this big empty room. And he just tried heaps of different colours, but I think that particular shade of like tennis ball green / yellow has been a part of this work since the beginning, so that had to be in there as well. Yeah.
I just feel like it is just such, because the first time I read these was in, you know, a PDF kind of form, and like the minute I saw this cover, I was like, of course. You know, like it just, I don't know, like it just feels so right. And now you're explaining it, explains so many of the elements that feel so right about it. Like it just, and also like it just, I just, like it's been out on our coffee. I just, everyone keeps bringing it out. Like, you know, when people come over, they're often like, and so it just, yeah, I always feel like it is so three dimensional. You just feel like you can, oh, just wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been asking people, oh, sorry. I'm just going to have a drink of water.
Yeah, please.
Yay. It's because we're about to talk to money about money.
Oh. You have an allergic money. Reaction.
I'm just going to check how long we're going. Oh, that's perfect. Oh, my God. Sorry.
Yes.
A little bit of break before we hit the money. Okay, all right. 3, 2, 1. One thing that I've been asking everyone about, and you do not have to answer, but I'm interested in how we support ourselves at different phases, you know, like financially, emotionally, you know, all those sorts of things. And I just wonder, because I think I'm always asking this question because I'm since I began thinking that I would quite like to write, I've been trying to find the special sauce, which is the perfect balance of money coming in and time to do my work. And, you know, I thought I had that, but I've just quit a job where it was like a 50, 60 hour a week job and I wasn't doing any writing. And I just wonder, like, do you have any thoughts about this? Is there anything you want to share about your own experience? But just around this thing of money and art, like...
Yeah. The eternal question.
I know.
It's tough. I don't feel like I probably have huge insight on it because I'm sort of, you know, new to these kinds of industries and stuff. But I do know that I've been working pretty solidly since I was about 15, and I've never stopped really for longer than a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that, it grinds you down, eh? And you get in a place where you think that you need a certain amount of money, and you kind of become trapped in that and fearful of losing things and that kind of thing, which is so fair, but that kind of mindset has just really ground me down. And... yeah, it's for me, it's less about finding time to squeeze the creative practice in, and it's more about making the space for yourself to just be before you even make that decision to be creative, you know, just like give yourself time to just do nothing but like plod around the house, maybe decide to sit on that couch and read a book for a minute and then get up and make a cup of tea and then maybe feel guilty about all the things that you should be doing but don't do any of them because I don't really have much insightful to say, unfortunately. I think I've also always viewed sort of creative stuff as like a bonus, you know, like, and maybe that'll change and maybe I'll want that to be more of my bread and butter, so to speak. I mean, I think, you know, I definitely obviously want to be doing more creative things. I've been working office-y jobs for a long time. So I think for me, at the moment, it's less about kind of balancing those things and more about letting go of that sort of capitalist mentality of working and needing, you know, a cushy amount of money. Softening into just existing a bit more. Yeah,
because I think that is one of the such violent and damaging things around capitalism is that it's almost like, I don't know, God, I don't know what I'm talking about because I don't understand Marx or anything, but like it just feels like the work doesn't want you to be, if you know what I mean, like the capitalist system doesn't want you to stop and be, because if you stop and be, you go, maybe I don't need to be in capitalism quite so much. And
yeah,
it's just this, you know, look at your phone, buy some stuff, do this, blah, 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 blah. And I just think, yeah, I'm really grateful for what you said, because I do think that is such a huge part of creating, is like, you know, like just mooching about. Like, yeah. I just think it just, nothing comes when I'm, you know, like, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting.
And it's sad that we think of that mooching about as like a luxury or something that that we have to earn, or something that that only certain people can have, when we all need that so much.
It's so true. Hey, I lied, and I've got one more question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I really have wanted to ask someone, and you are the perfect person to ask. One of the things I found interesting when I was writing Audition was that stuff you were talking about, where it was like, oh, you need to get permission for this piece of music, mm-hmm. and da 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 da. And like, I sort of grew up kind of like De La Soul, and you know, like just this idea of, and you know, having watched you DJ and stuff like that, you know, like it seems that in music it's a totally different copyright system where you know, you can reproduce music. And I just wonder, like, this idea, I'm reading this really great essay this morning about that idea of found fiction and, you know, what's to be done with that, but this idea of sampling inside fiction, it feels like we keep hitting this wall in literature, which is that copyright stuff. And there's work that I feel like is really hard to create when you want to sample, because that's how I always think of it, you know, like I'm sampling
remixing this chord.
Exactly. And I just wonder if you've got any thoughts on that. I don't know, like,
yeah, that's a really cool question and like a really cool insight that I hadn't thought about, so thank you for that. I wonder if some of it goes to what we were talking about before about collaboration and that being really built into music, and not so much in writing, and that kind of permeates all of that sort of infrastructure around writing. Because it's just sad, those kind of restrictions that we have around how we can, you know, represent all of the stuff that's, you know, freely available to us in our lives, but then it becomes restrictive at the point when you want to put it out in public. It's so weird. I don't think I have anything, again, that insightful to say, because it's just, it kind of breaks my brain how weird and silly it's all become, you know, and how scary and hyper-capitalist everything is getting in so many ways, far beyond the arts and you know, going into the occupation in Palestine and all that kind of stuff, and like the army funding, the US Army funding, Raytheon funding South by Southwest, and I think it just feels like it's becoming more and more crystal clear just how fucked all of that is. Sometimes I just go into that and I just get sad.
And I think, I mean, it is really upsetting, but I think, thank you so much for drawing that continuum, because it totally is. Like, I just, you know, massive respect for the New Zealand artists that are pulling out of South by Southwest, and, you know, like the, you know, I just saw that Grace Yee pulled out of a residency with Victoria Library over the horseshit that's going on there as well. And I just think, it is this continuum. And I guess I'm just going to end on this. This cheered me up. Always gave me, sent me a link to this incredible zine, which is writing on Fast and the Furious. And it's all based kind of on animorphs and transness, and it's just the most beautiful zine. And it's just like, it seems to operate outside, do you know what I mean? Like, and I think that is the other option, isn't it? Like, we can operate in ways that are outside these systems and be a little bit crafty and fun.
There's not enough fun utopian stuff to kind of connect to. Sometimes you just want that. It's not even escapism, it's just hope.
I love that. Let's end there. It's not even escapism, it's hope.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Pip.
Thanks heaps.
Yay.